You're listening to Vet Candy.
Hey all, this is Dr. Jill Lopez. You may know me as the founder of Vet Candy, but do you know why I started Vet Candy? Simply put, it's because of people like you. I love that in our profession, there's always somebody new to meet. I'm really passionate about meeting new people and sharing their stories. And I consider myself fortunate to work in a field that is full of the coolest people on the planet. And that's why I created 21 Questions, to share their stories. With 21 Questions, we take a deep dive into interesting stories and topics. We talk with others in a free-formed, wide-open, relaxed conversation to not only have some laughs, but maybe to inspire some people along the way. Are you ready to get started? I am. Let's go! In the heart of Kentucky, amidst the rolling hills and verdant landscapes, a young girl dreamt of a future filled with purpose and compassion. Little did she know that her aspirations would lead her on a remarkable journey, shaping her into the compassionate and inspirational veterinarian she is today. I'm so excited to introduce you today, our very, very special guest. She's one of the few board-certified veterinary criticalists. She's also the instructor of our master course in urgent care, which you should definitely check out. Yes, our guest today is no other than Dr. Natasha Richardson. Welcome to the show, Dr. Natasha.
Hello, thank you for having me today.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. I feel like I've known you for years and met you in person, but I haven't. I've only seen you when you were taping your master course on Zoom, but I feel like I was with you. It's the new virtual world.
You basically were. You know, most of the time it is. It's so fun how that works.
That was fun. We were talking about the course earlier. That was a really fun course to take. And as I was editing it, I was thinking, you know, I could still be a veterinarian. And then module 8 happened. And I'm like, forget it. There's not enough vets, right? And I was thinking, I should open up a vet practice here in Connecticut and, you know, have something going. And I have to probably take my NAVLE again. And so I was so excited. So I had your course. I'm looking through it. And then blood typing. And I'm like, oh, my God. Do they ask questions about blood typing on NAVLE, do you think? They could, right?
Probably could, yes. Yeah, it's been a while since I've done mine, but yeah, I imagine they probably could.
Yeah, that's the problem. So yeah, and I watched it because I edit it, and every time I edit something, I'm looking at something like so many times, and I still like, oh my God. And back in the day when I was practicing, I don't think we blood typed anything. I mean, I don't really remember. I don't think we did. Isn't that awful? But we did have a greyhound that lived in the practice that we used as a blood donor. So I don't know if we got lucky. I don't even remember even having to transfuse anything, but we had this dog. Maybe somebody did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunate to not have to have very many reactions on that front. But we know so much more all the time, right? Our knowledge is growing. Our knowledge of what reactions are out there is growing, and so that pushes us to then have to practice a different level of medicine, and it can be hard to keep up, you know, sometimes with everything. So I'm glad that I was able to do the course. So,
yeah, and I was telling you earlier too, my favorite is neurology. Like, I have a new love for neurology. I sort of remember taking it in school, and I talked to Jemiah Tracy, and I was like, why did you go into neurology? And he said he was thinking about internal medicine, but he said with internal medicine, usually most of your cases die, you know, like long, prolonged deaths. He said neurology, he said it was almost like you could turn a case around and it's like a miracle, miracle, miracle. And I was like, really? Because I always thought if you have a neurologist, it's bad news. But he was like, yeah, it's like there's so many cases that they have that seem like, you know, really severe cases, but they're able to turn them around. So now I'm like, wow, neurology is cool. Neurology is really cool. So being a criticalist, you're everything, right?
Yes, a little bit of everything. Yes. We obviously never know what's going to come through the door. Every single day is a new adventure, as we say. And I could have a neurology type case. I could have a cardiac case. I could have a respiratory case. I could have an internal medicine case if the internal medicine specialist isn't in the building. So, yeah, it's a variety of everything, which is hard and challenging, but fun at the same time.
So, if you weren't a criticalist, what is your second favorite specialty?
Oh, that's a good question. So I actually almost went into ophthalmology. I really liked eyes. Yeah, but I didn't want to do the same sort of thing. It's obviously not the exact same every day, but I didn't want to do the same sort of thing every single day. And I really liked the options for being able to just kind of see different things coming through the door all the time and to continue to push myself from a knowledge perspective. But yeah, opto would have been the one I would have done, I think.
Well, you know, with ophthalmology, you rarely have emergencies. You do like Monday through Friday, you have weekends off. It's like the opposite of critical care.
Yeah, sometimes I question my quality of life choices, but I love critical care and I love, kind of the fast-paced aspect of it sometimes. But yeah, opto would have been that other one. Maybe someday. Maybe someday if I get tired of being a criticalist, I'll go back and do an opto fellowship or something.
Well, do you know DJ Heusler? He has the Animal Eye Institute in Ohio. And I know you're in South Carolina, and he just opened up a practice with Dr. Christina Korb in Charleston, South Carolina. And she's doing the Animal Eye Institute in Charleston.
I did not know that. I will have to reach out to them and let them know that we are, kind of surrounding. We're about an hour and a half from Charleston, but a surrounding kind of other additional hospitals they have. Weird cases. Every once in a while, you get eye cases that also need underlying kind of critical care or additional workup. So I'll have to reach out to them and say hi.
Yeah. I'll introduce you for sure. Yeah, one of the cases DJ told us, he always tells us crazy cases. There was a case of a cat. I think it went to emergency clinic, and it had an ulcer that was treated for 3 weeks appropriately, and it still had an ulcer. And it turned out eventually go to ophthalmologist, turned out it had facial nerve paralysis and wasn't able to blink its eye. And so, it was one of those weird things that you would never think of.
Some of my more interesting ones have been for eye things, obviously coming in through ER, but I saw a dog back in the fall of last year that had a porcupine quill through its eye on one side. And
Oh my God. That's like Final Destination, right? It's like a Final Destination thing.
yeah, we sedated it and took all the quills out of the every other place on its face and mouth, and then sent it to the ophthalmologist to get the eye quill taken out on its own. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Was it able to, did it keep its eye?
No, absolutely not. No, that one was long gone, but hopefully there was, trauma to any of the nerves in the back. There was no major hemorrhage or anything like that. It was just a quill kind of right through the globe. But I have seen some foreign material, like small little sticks and things, where we've transferred them to the ophthalmologist and they've had surgery right away, and they've actually been able to keep the eye and have come back with full functioning eye on that side, and maybe just some corneal scarring. So it is really impressive, some of the things that they can do surgically. And I always thought it was so fun to watch them do surgery with the microscope.
Yeah, I love that. DJ does it all the time. He actually did I don't know what the real name is for it, the corneal flap repair. He did it and he videotaped it. And then we have it in one of our CE programs. It's called The Case of the One-Eyed Cat, which I told you the answer, right? He has facial injury, but he does the surgery and we sped it up. It's so cool. The little tiny, he's using like, I guess, like micro instruments or something. It's crazy.
Yes, it's amazing.
So, are you ready to play 21 questions?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay, great. I'm going to start out with my favorite question. If you could go on vacation anywhere in the world, there's no budget, you can spend whatever you want, you can bring whoever you want, but you can only go there for 1 week, where would you go? Who would you bring with you? What would you do and what would you eat?
Oh, my goodness. Ah, that is such a fantastic question. If there was no budget and I could go anywhere, I would probably honestly do like a full week in New Zealand and just kind of travel, from one end of the island to the other. I would likely take my husband because that's somewhere he's always wanted to go as well. So we could adventure, we could hike. My friend actually just went there recently and she did bungee jumping. I don't know if I would be brave enough for that, but I might consider doing it. And then just eating the, local cuisine. I don't really know what it would be there, but just experiencing all of the food and culture that they have to offer. And of course, doing, I'm going to expose my nerd side a little bit, but doing some of the Lord of the Rings stuff would be fantastic and so awesome to go to the set and see where everything was filmed. I would love that. I think that would be amazing.
There's no New Zealand restaurants. I have no idea. But I do know there's less poisonous animals in New Zealand than Australia.
Significantly less. I don't know that they have any, actually. But yes, that's part of the reason why I think I would probably choose New Zealand over Australia and maybe a little bit safer. So, yeah.
Let's stop right here, keep your thought, and let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Are you ready to unmask the opioid crisis and uncover the vital role of veterinarians in the battle against it? Join me, Clay Palmer, for Unmasking the Opioid Crisis, A Veterinarian's Vital Role Unveiled, presented by Vet Candy and brought to you by Covetrus. In this enlightening podcast series, I will take you on a journey through the layers of the opioid crisis and talk about the role veterinarians play to help protect their patients, communities, and even themselves. Together, we'll unravel the complexities, engage in insightful discussions, and gain valuable insights. Stay tuned for a podcast that empowers, educates, and unites us in the battle against opioid misuse. Don't miss Unmasking the Opioid Crisis. Tune in on Vet Candy on a podcast platform of your choice, and let's make a difference together. Brought to you by Covetrus and presented by Vet Candy.
Next question. You go to the grocery store and there's salsa. There's mild, medium, and hot, extra hot. Which one do you grab?
I'm a mild girl. I'm a mild girl all the way, unfortunately. But yes, it would be the mild for me. I can take a little bit of heat, but not a lot.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. I thought the critic list would always take the hot, the caliente, hot.
We're only adventurous with our careers, I guess.
Okay. Next question. What is the weirdest case you've ever worked on? I mean, I know, like, being an emergency vet, you've probably seen the weirdest things in the world. What's the weirdest of the weird?
Gosh, so we had not necessarily weird, but very traumatic. We had a middle-aged dog come in through the ER, and the owners pulled into the parking lot with this dog in the back of the truck and a 10-foot piece of rebar hanging out of the back of the truck, dragging on the ground, and come to find out the dog had been running and had jumped and impaled itself with this long piece of rebar from one shoulder all the way through the body to the other hip. And they had no way of cutting it. So they brought the dog to the hospital in the back of a truck with this 10-foot piece of rebar hanging out of the back of the truck. We had to call the fire department and sedate the dog while stabilizing it in the back of the truck. And the firefighters are covering us, with their jackets while they're cutting this metal piece of rebar off of this dog. And then, we ended up taking the dog to surgery, and it was honestly a miracle. It had punctured part of the spleen and one of the intestines, but for some reason had not gone through the thoracic cavity and had missed a lot of the other vital organs in the abdomen miraculously. So we did an intestinal resection and an anastomosis. We did a splenectomy, and the dog went on to live a happy, healthy life after that. So, but that was one of the most interesting, craziest cases I've seen, I think.
Was that a Labrador Retriever by chance?
Absolutely. How did you know?
I don't know. I've got sixth sense, but oh my God. Oh my God. You know what? I bet the statistics, if I asked like 1,000 vets, like what's the weirdest situation you've ever seen? Probably 98% would be a Labrador Retriever involved story, right?
My husband always wonders why I'm waiting for something chaotic to happen with our Labrador. And I'm like, this is the reason.
Yeah, I worked at Poison Control Center for years, and it was like the things they did were unbelievable. The things they ate. Oh my God. It's a whole podcast talking about that. Okay, next question. If you could travel to any year in a time machine, past or future, where would you go and why?
Do you want the fun answer or do you want the sentimental answer?
Give us both. Give us both.
The fun answer would be, I think I would travel back to the 1920s. And obviously it was a very traumatic time for a lot of reasons, but just to experience some of the culture that was happening at that point in time, and to be able to see, you know, some of the changes just in politics, as well as to be able to put on a flapper dress if I wanted to and go to a party and dance, would be really, really fun and very interesting. The sentimental answer would be I'd probably travel back to, you know, the early 2000s before my dad passed away, hang out with him a bit, you know, get to know him and spend some time with him. So yeah, there's two answers for that one.
Aw, that's so sad you lost your father so young. Were you still in vet school then? Let me think, when was that?
So he passed away in 2003. So I was actually 14. I was in high school. Yeah. So he had pancreatic cancer and passed away when I was a kid. But, you know, obviously very sad, but there's a lot that I learned about in taking care of him and communicating with my family and communicating with doctors at such a young age that I think truly has impacted me and helped me to become the doctor that I am. So there's always taking some degree of trauma and sadness and trying to find the positive on the opposite side of that. And I, you know, am definitely, at least to some degree, thankful for how it influenced me and allowed me to become, you know, a better doctor, I think, and a better person in some regards. So, yeah.
Next question. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
Oh, this is silly. I would be more athletic. I am just not a very athletic person. Hand-eye coordination, not my jam, but I would pick a sport to be really good at or something. But yeah, I think I would try to be a little bit more athletic if I could pick one thing.
That's funny because I always think about it. When I think of criticalists, I think of like Dr. Carrie Himmelgarn. I know she's like a runner. She looks like a runner and she's a runner. And then she's like paddle boarding. And she was a cheerleader for Utah when she was in undergrad. So I always think of criticalists being almost super athletes. So you're not an athlete?
I rode horses for a long time, kind of growing up. But other than that, I didn't really get super involved in sports. And a lot of it is just learned behavior, right? Stuff that you do. You learn hand-eye coordination if you play sports as a kid. My sister and I didn't. We were dance, gymnastics, horseback riding. So I just don't have that typical athlete side, you know, being able to just kind of be good at different sporty type things. So yeah,
it's still, you could do a New Year's resolution for 2024 to find your, like your game this year. What is it going to be? Yeah. Dr. Carrie like inspired me. Well, after I talked to her, I actually got two paddle boards and I probably used them twice in 3 years, but I have them and I'm like, I'm a paddle boarder. You know, that's a fun thing to do. And you're close to a lot of, there's rivers there and I wouldn't go in the ocean with one myself, but
alligators in the rivers around here too. So it's kind of like do you go in? Maybe I can go in estuaries, you know, where there's sort of brackish water and try and paddleboard there. So I do think there's a community or group of people that do paddleboarding, you know, in this area and they do it for like exercise. So maybe that'll be part of my New Year's resolution.
And you know what is so, what's so hot right now, and I think it's ridiculous, is pickleball. Have you, like, why is that? That's not a sport.
I have a neighbor who full on goes to competitions every single weekend. You know, he's gone to, you know, both Saturday and Sunday. He's gone doing competitions for pickleball. It's more power to you, buddy. It's not how I want to spend my Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, and the people that do pickleball are such snobs. They don't even want anyone else. Like, if you try to come in, they're like, look at you, and it's just crazy. I'm like, how is that becoming such a hot sport? I think that's ridiculous. So don't do pickleball.
Okay, whoa. I'm just getting a note. We have to go to commercial break. So you guys keep listening, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Vet Candy makes learning fun with the most exciting experts on the planet. Become a Vet Candy member for exclusive access to our library of more than 100 studio qualities and race-approved videos taped in 4K. Say hello to streaming and goodbye to boring webinars with us. Plus, members can connect with specialists and licensed mental health care experts on our forums and get answers to your burning questions with our knowledge database. You can even create a custom learning plan, keep track of your progress, and track your CE credits all in one spot. Your personalized learning journey starts with us. What are you waiting for? Sign up today at myvetcandy.com.
Okay, next question. Who is your celebrity crush?
Cillian Murphy. Have you ever watched Peaky Blinders? Or did you?
Yes, I hate his haircut. That's like a really graphically violent show, too.
But he's a fantastic actor. And obviously, you know, going to vet school in England, I have this sort of soft spot for all things British culture. But yes, Cillian Murphy. He's been in a lot of other things, too. But that is my celebrity crush. And my husband knows it.
Oh, my favorite show with him. I think it's probably one of his first ones was 28 Days Later. Did you ever see that? He had a really weird haircut in that too. Cause he had fell off his carrier bike and he had head trauma. And so they shaved his head and then he is strapped in a hospital bed and then he wakes up from a coma. And so he's got like, I guess he's like always has to have really crazy hair, but he has such beautiful eyes. They're like ice blue.
Yes, stunning. And he's funny. If you've ever watched his interviews and stuff, he's totally like aloof to pop culture. He's like, what's a meme? What's a hashtag? I don't know. It's really funny.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. What's your biggest fear?
I'm really scared of heights, if I'm being completely honest. I don't like heights. I don't like being up on tall surfaces. Even if I ride roller coasters, I try to like sit on the inside seat. I'm very afraid of heights. Yeah.
Me too. I mean, me too. Do you know that they say that people that have fear of heights, acrophobia, it's because you have this inner urge to jump off and you're trying to hold yourself back from jumping off or something?
Oh, that's deep. No, I didn't know that.
I know. Yeah. So it's something where you, maybe like your subconscious is scared. You're going to get so nervous. You're going to jump off or something. It's just really weird. For me, oh my God, it's the worst thing. Okay. Next question. What's the wildest or craziest thing you've ever done?
I feel like I answer these questions and I think I'm not a very exciting person. So I went to a vet school overseas in England and we pieced out one weekend last minute for a concert to travel to Ireland. And we just, you decided within 24 hours, we found out about the concert. We were like, okay, we're skipping class on Friday. We booked everything. We peaced out and we left and went to Ireland for 4 days. That's probably one of the more, I guess maybe not crazy necessarily, but spontaneous things I've ever done. I don't know about crazy though. I'm not a very crazy person, maybe.
Well, I mean, that's crazy. You know, you didn't miss your test or anything, right? You just left school.
Yeah, just left and took the day off. We lived over there, so we figured, you know, we might as well embrace it while we were there. I guess the craziest thing would be going into critical care. Some might call that pretty crazy.
Were you married when you went to England, or did you get married after England?
After England, yeah. I didn't meet my husband until after I got back from vet school.
Wow. Because it almost seems like if you go to England, you might have met someone there, you know?
A lot of my friends did. I did not. Yeah. But a lot of my friends did. I have friends now who either have British partners that are in the US or, you know, they're American and they live overseas, which is kind of cool. Actually, I have a good friend who met someone in England, but now he was Australian and now they live in Australia.
Because, I mean, you can't help it, that accent, you know?
No, it'll draw you in. You got to be careful. You got to be careful.
Yeah. And they're so classy. They're so classy.
They can be.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's trashy. That's true. There's still trashy ones there, too. So how did you meet your husband?
I'm going to tell on myself a little bit. So I was an intern at a hospital in Kentucky when I got back from veterinary school. And he was an assistant working there, and he was finishing up. He's a couple years younger than me. He was finishing up his undergrad, and we just kind of got to know each other, and we actually butted heads a little bit at first, and then we had a case, a really sad case of a puppy that had a septic abdomen that went to surgery and wasn't doing well postoperatively. And, you know, I was working kind of feverishly on this case, and he was one of the assistants that was helping me. And for hours and hours, it was just the two of us kind of working on this case for a long time. And we sort of got to know each other and kind of bonded over this case, and things grew from there. And yeah, that's it.
Aw, oh, that's so sweet. I don't even want to know about the puppy because I don't think it's a happy ending. I'm not listening. Okay, next question. What's your favorite food of all times?
I absolutely love lasagna. Like, die hard, love lasagna. If I had to pick one thing that I could, you know, eat on repeat, it would probably be lasagna. I really like wings too, but a bit of an odd contrast there. But yes, lasagna is one of my big ones.
Okay, that's very strange. Lasagna doesn't sound very healthy. You seem like you're very healthy to me.
I don't eat it very often, but I am a relatively healthy person. But if I had to pick like one thing that I was gonna just kind of like have, it would be like pizza or something fried. But I'm like, no, give me like a lot of pasta and meat sauce. That is what I would like to have.
Yeah, that's good. Especially in the winter, like when it's cold and you have a nice thing of lasagna, that'd be good. And you can make it healthy. Like, they make healthy lasagnas. That's true. Okay, next question is, what's your favorite childhood memory?
One of my favorite childhood memories is I was in school one day as a kid in elementary school, and they came and said, your dad's here. He's checking you out early. You're going to leave and go with your dad today. And it was early in the morning. It was maybe like, I don't know, sometime around 9, very beginning of the day. And I went and met my dad in, you know, kind of the school lobby. And he was like, so do you want to go to Disney World today? Because we lived in Florida at the time. And I was like, yes, absolutely. So he took me out of school and took me to Disney, just the two of us for the day. And it was awesome. So one of my favorite experiences for sure.
Oh my gosh, did your mom get mad?
No, so my mom worked for AAA, so she got the tickets, but she had to work. She had called him and said, like, I had these tickets, and my sister she's older than me, so she was in, I guess, middle school and taking, like, kind of heavier classes, but I was just in grade school. So yeah, he came and picked me up, took me to Disney for the day.
Oh my God, that sounds like, that's like every child's fantasy, I'm sure. So I thought you grew up in Kentucky, so you grew up partly in Florida?
Yeah, so we moved to Kentucky when I was 12. So kind of half Florida, half Kentucky, a little bit of a combination. That's how I ended up kind of back in South Carolina. It was the combination of the two, of being, you know, in the South, but close to the water at the same time. So, yeah.
Okay, except your water has got alligators in it. So no thanks. Yeah, that's one thing I'm really happy in Connecticut is that we don't have alligators. Because I think about in the summer, we're always out in the water. And I'm like, thank God they don't come this. Well, maybe in the future they'll come up here, but not now, which is good. Okay, and now for your last question. What are three things on your bucket list?
I would like to travel. And one of the places, and we already talked about New Zealand, that would be amazing. So that is ultimately something that we as a family really want to do eventually, is go spend a week or 2 weeks there and just kind of travel across the country. That would be high on my bucket list. Man, this is a tough one. I want to have a family. So that's something that, you know, is something that we're hoping towards and wanting to have someday. And it might not seem, you know, like the most exciting bucket list item, but we're a little bit non-traditional. We did, you know, I did residency and internship and have spent a lot of years working, and, you know, being a little bit older, having a family is a major goal for us. And then we want to have a little farm someday, which I know you guys can kind of empathize with a little bit, having a farm and your animals. But I would love to have a hobby farm and a garden, and, you know, to, for my retirement plan or semi-retirement plan, to just be, you know, having this big garden and selling all of my products at a, you know, a local farmer's market, and having goats and doing, you know, goat cheese and milk. And I've gotten really into bread lately. So yeah, they're not really big, huge bucket list items, but they're things that I think are really important for us as a family.
Oh, that's great. Well, my advice to you, freeze your eggs. Go call someone up, get your eggs frozen for sure. That's my advice. Yes. And you will be happy that I said that. And this is my advice to you. If I could go back in time, I would tell you to do it 10 years ago. But today is the first day of your eggs getting older and older every day. So that's cool. Okay. I hate to stop you here. I feel so bad. But let's stop right here. Keep your thought. And let's go to a commercial break. And we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey everybody, I'm Caitlin Palmer.
And I'm Clay.
And together we host a podcast by Pet Candy called Obsessed.
With the Palmers.
With the Palmers.
We talk about creepies, crawlies, and cryptids, and any other creatures that science may or may not have disproven.
Some of these creatures might be aliens.
Some of them are spooky.
Most of them are spooky.
But we laugh and have a good time about it.
The best time.
And maybe you can have the best time too, but probably not.
You definitely would. So come check us out on Pet Candy Radio, Obsessed with the Palmers.
So if anybody wanted to get in touch with you and talk to you, like, I don't think you're really on social media, right? You're not a social media kind of person.
A little bit. I'm not super active. I mean, you know, I always check my socials every day, but I'm not crazy active. But they could reach out to me, you know, on Instagram if they wanted to. But yeah, my email is probably one of the best ways to get in touch with me, my hospital email. So yeah, that would be the best one. I don't know if we want to post.
Well, I mean, I hate posting people's email addresses because you might get like spammed. But so Instagram. So if somebody wants to reach out to you, I don't think you're on LinkedIn, right? You're not on LinkedIn?
I'm not on LinkedIn. I need to get on there, but no, I'm not on LinkedIn. But yeah, Natasha_Richardson. Natasha spelled with an O. It's a little bit odd, but there you go. Richardson on Instagram. Feel free to reach out to me anytime. And I love chatting about critical cases, but I also love chatting about, you know, people's career goals. I've had quite a few interns, especially over the last few years, that I've spent a lot of time kind of talking to them about pros and cons of doing intern residency versus just going into ER med versus, you know, finding avenues outside of work or outside of vet med that, you know, can bring them joy in their day-to-day life. And I love chatting to people. I love chatting to students, baby vets. I did an interview the other day with a high school student for a school project wanting to, you know, potentially school. So anytime, feel free to reach out to me.
Speaking of internships, we just recently published an article about how brutal they are. And it does seem like when people are in internships, you don't hear from them for 4 years, right? You don't hear from them. So they don't even complain about it. But we were talking about the how much money they get, which is like $20,000 or $30,000 for 4 years. They work 100-hour week, and it's just brutal. And I've mentioned Dr. Tracy, Dr. Jemiah Tracy earlier, and he was saying he was a football player in college, and he's this big guy, and he's making like $30,000 a year. He could barely afford to feed himself, and he had a mentor that would feed him once in a while because he was like literally starving. You know, he couldn't live on ramen. He's a big guy. And he said somehow, like, he actually met his wife while he was in residency, he said, which was tough because, like, how do you date, especially, he thought, as a man, you can't, he couldn't afford to take his wife out to, even to get ramen, he couldn't afford it. So, yeah, so it's tough. So hopefully that changes because I don't think that's fair.
It's getting better. I was really fortunate in the internship that I was in that I actually, a private practice internship, I actually made in the 40,000s range.
And you should be getting a lot more than that. You should be getting you're doing work, and the work is not like, it's not the Salvation Army. You should be getting paid.
Yeah. But they let us pick up a lot of relief shift too. We only worked 4 weeks, so it definitely is better. Residency was tougher. We were in the 50s range, but we were working 5 days a week. We didn't have time for anything else. It's partially what I expect from a residency. But it is getting better. There's actually a big listserv on the ACFEC critical care listserv right now going around on how can we make life easier and more sustainable for interns and residents while also making sure that they see, you know, the caseload that they need to be able to see to be able to kind of get as much as possible out of their, you know, 3 years, because that is part of the challenge. You know, if you're only in the hospital a certain amount of time, you do miss out on some of those cases. You know, if you're not scheduled a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're not on call and there's a ventilator case that whole time, you know, and that might be the only ventilator case that you see in 2 years, you know, 2 to 3 years, you really do have to kind of push yourself a little bit if you want to learn. So I definitely think there's a checks and balances in it that needs to happen. There's a lot of interesting perspectives. You know, you should reach out to some of the big wigs at some of the universities to get their perspectives on it as well, because we are trying, but also the money has to come from somewhere. So it is challenging.
There's so much money in vet med. That's the thing. It's like, you know, money isn't everything, but it helps you survive, you know, and because you're at the same time, your student loans are due. You know, you can defer them, but you're going to be paying more interest.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, you know, the conversation needs to go all the way around. It's not just, you know, interns and residents. It's all the way down to nurses that need to be making more money at. But yeah, it is, you know, coming from private practice in a new hospital that's just opening and knowing some of the ins and outs of the finances, there's a lot of money, but sometimes it's not as much money as you think that it is. So it is a balancing act of trying to find, you know, both sides and see both sides of it. But we are getting better. We're trying to get better. But I would say for someone who's wanting, you know, something more sustainable, yeah, universities, unfortunately, that you're just not going to get the money right now. Hopefully that changes soon. But private practice, where a lot more of the money is for residencies and internships and things. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I just feel bad. I didn't realize, like, I had no idea, because you don't hear from them. They go away. They're invisible. And then they show up later.
Yeah, I missed 4 years, 5 years of life between residency, taking boards, and you know, it really does. It sets your entire life back. And I'm thankful for the training that I got. I'm a better, significantly better clinician for it. I think internships definitely have their value and can make you a lot better clinician. But it is. It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And next week we have on our show, listeners, we have Jeremiah Pouncey, who's a first year in Cornell, and he actually wants to go into wildlife medicine, which is the big trend now. You know, there was a trend for criticalists. Now everybody wants to go into conservation and wildlife medicine. Yeah. Speaking of low salaries, that's probably one of the lower ones, but you know, if you have a passion.
And zoo medicine and, you know, marine mammal medicine, that, yeah, those are some tough low salaries. And you usually have to live in a city space for them too, you know, because that's where the zoos and maybe not conservation medicine, but definitely for zoo and aquarium medicine, you usually got to live in a big city. And I don't know how people do it.
Well, thanks for being on the show. And listeners, thanks for listening. And if you haven't subscribed, subscribe. Bye.
It's Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.